I turned this off. Radden, are we good?
Can you hear me now? Yeah,
you're
good.
The floor,
okay. Great. Hi, everybody. I'm Bud. I'm an alcoholic. And that is great. I'd like to thank Owen and my friend Ann for inviting me here this evening. And Al-Anon and AA. It's an honor to speak to you all. My sobriety date is October 20th, 2021, which is a little over a year, and it's been a lot has happened this year, and all of it good. So my story, what it was like. I was born and raised in Poughkeepsie, New York, and in the Mid-Hudson Valley, about 75 miles north of New York City. A middle-class upbringing. My dad worked at my uncle's lumber yard. My mom was a homemaker. And I had an older sister and younger brother. And we had normal, as we've learned that there really is no such thing as normal, but it seemed pretty normal at the time, upbringing. There was no heavy drinking, I should say, there was no known alcoholism in my family and in that I came in contact with growing up. However, there was a lot of drinking. Drinking was part of the culture. I'm 70 years old. So this is in my childhood is the late 50s and early 60s. So I remember the Thanksgivings and Christmases, the get-togethers, and there was a lot of drinking, though not a lot of overt inebriation, but it was constant. Everybody always drank, and especially Christmas time, everybody came to the house. I had a fifth and a gift box that were passed around, and it's just that drinking was I was aware of it when I was probably. Maybe 5 or 6. It was before pop tops on beer cans. So my dad taught me how to open a beer can. You take a can opener, you put one big hole in and then another little vent hole. So I could go to the refrigerator and get a beer and bring him a beer and I was a good boy. And as a reward, I got a swig. And that was a big deal too, just one, but I was introduced to the taste of beer early and always kind of liked it. So moving on up through, you know, my school years, I played basketball. I was a pretty good student, not a great student. And again, there was drinking. The drinking age was 18, and I was big for my age, so I could buy liquor at the store even before I was 18, which was usually a six pack that we all chipped in on, three of us, and we have two cans each, and it was a big deal. But again, I don't remember anybody getting really drunk and really sick and really outrageous. It was just kind of a lightweight thing. But as I came to learn, as I grew older, it did become a problem. I can remember having jobs where I would stop at the bar after work for a couple of drinks, then go home and have dinner, take a shower, and then go back to the bar and socialize, and then come home and go, this is during the week, and then go to work the next morning. And again, the reason I'm going into so much detail about this is I think I had it ingrained in me that drinking was just a part of life. It was at every social function that I attended or that my family hosted. And as we've learned, as I've learned since I came into the program, that alcoholism can be a progressive disease. And I'm quite sure that's what it was in my case, because I drank steadily pretty much from 18 to 50. And 50, it became to be a problem. That's about 20 years ago. And it was gradual. It was just gradual. I would usually throw in my cooler. I was a carpenter and then a general contractor and then a carpenter again. But I usually packed my lunch and had a cooler, and I used to have a can of beer in the cooler for the ride home. Again, I think part of my drinking culture. And but then it got to be more than that, and it got to be a shot and a beer after work. And then it was more and more. And then it got to be a problem. It got to be a problem because I wasn't feeling good in the morning, and I was going in a little later. And I didn't really recognize those signs immediately. I just kind of figured it was, I was getting older, and that's the way things went. But it did get to the point, like I said, around 50, when it was getting bad, it was impacting my marriage. Eventually it ended my marriage. And the first time I came to AA was after my first DUI. That was in 2003 in Half Moon Bay. I was at a party. It wasn't a party. It was four or five of my friends who were all married, but the wives weren't there. So it was kind of like a bachelor party, except nobody was getting married. And it was cards and eating and drinking, and kind of planned on everybody was going to have too much. But there was an extra cottage down there. Again, we're in Half Moon Bay at my friend's house. So, you know, it was all designed. I was staying for the night. There was not going to be any drinking and driving. And after probably around midnight, everything wound down. And my next memory was flashing lights. I had gotten up and gotten dressed and gotten in my truck, and I was going to drive back home to Concord on the Pacific Coast Highway at 4 a.m. in the rain. And luckily, some San Mateo County sheriffs saw me weaving and pulled me over in Half Moon Bay. So I didn't get very far, which I consider a blessing. I doubt I would have made it up that coast at night. But I took a breathalyzer test, and one of the deputies said to me, he looked at me, and he said this not with any meanness in his voice, but he just looked at me and he said, "You're an alcoholic." And he said, you just blew a 0.24. He said, and when we get guys who are 0.24, they don't sit here and have conversations with us. You're having a normal conversation with us. It means you have a serious drinking problem. And again, he wasn't being mean. He was just being informative. So that was, I got to AA a couple of weeks after that. Actually, it was in December, and I went to my first meeting in Walnut Creek on New Year's Eve. And I remember because one of the gentlemen there said to me, "We usually get you guys tomorrow, not tonight." And I said, but so anyway, I stayed in AA for a year, had commitments, was going to 3-4 meetings a week, but I was going almost exclusively to these large men's groups. And I didn't diversify to smaller meetings or mixed meetings. And I became turned off to it. It seemed to me to be kind of clicky and almost kind of militaristic in its rules. I wasn't responding to it, but I was really trying. And I got a sponsor, and I worked the steps, and I did. I remember the third step prayer at my sponsor's house, kneeling in his living room. And I did, not precisely at that moment, but I did have a spiritual awakening. I had been, my younger brother was spiritual, still is spiritual, and he always kind of nudged me to consider spirituality. He wasn't pushy, but he would give me some things to read. And it just all of a sudden, reading the big book and learning about the steps, and specifically the third step, I did have a spiritual awakening, and it was wonderful. all of a sudden, a lot of things just started to seem to make sense and started to fall into place. And it was described as a pink cloud, and I definitely experienced that. But I also was getting the benefit of not drinking. I was working harder, it was healthier, I was exercising, and life was good. And but I was disenchanted with the environment, and I left. And then left, but I stayed sober for 6 years, and I immersed myself in spiritual reading during that time. And I would occasionally think, you know, question whether or not I was really an alcoholic, and I would have conversations with myself and say, well, even if you aren't, why would you even want to try? Why would you even want to experiment? And I would say, right, never mind. I had been renting a room. I found a little cottage in Lafayette. I had a good job as a carpenter. It was warranty work, which is pretty light work. And I had gotten out of debt. I'd been in debt for about 15 years. I had out of debt. I had money in the bank, and life was good. Everything was going just fine. And so much so that I heard my ex-wife approach me and ask me if I would like to get back together with her. And I told her that that sounded interesting. And I definitely, that had been on my mind since we've been separated. And she was anxious for me to move back in to the house, our house, it was her house now. And I said, because when we had first met, we never really dated. And we just kind of moved in together. We fell in love, and then we got married. So I said, now we have our opportunity to date. You can come to my place. I'll come to your place. And she said, no, I really want you to move in. So I did. And looking back, it was one of those things I wish I hadn't done, but I did, and it's done. And shortly after I was... We were back together for a few months, and she cooked pasta one night, and I said, you know what, I'm going to have a glass of wine. And she said, oh, I don't think that's a good idea. And I said, yeah, well, you know, I said, it's been 6 years, you know, I've got this now. Look at it, all my problems are solved. I got money in the bank. I got a good job. And I don't have to go into a lot of detail with you about how that went. It went downhill fast. So that ended my longest period of sobriety, 6 years. Following that was like 2004 to 2010. Between then and now, I've had two sober years, one in 2014, one in 2017, and many brief periods of sobriety in between relapses. I typically would go three months to 5 months. And then usually when I relapsed, it wasn't because of a stressful situation or anything that was causing me anxiety. It was, everything was going really well. And what's a half pint gonna hurt? Well, a half pint will kill you. It almost killed me. But that was when I would relapse, when things were going really good. I was just gonna have a couple just for the weekend. But inevitably, it was the same result, and it ended up with me in bed for 3 or 4 days before I could finally get going again. And it was just brutal. So then in 2016, I got another DUI, which didn't count as my second because it had been longer than 10 years. But still, there was property damage. No one was injured, thank God. I give in my daily gratitude prayer, I give thanks for that every day, that no one was injured or killed in my drunken crash, nor all the other times I drove drunk. So that got me back to AA again. And I immersed myself more. I had a different attitude about it now. I was going to smaller meetings, going to mixed meetings, going to book studies. And taking all of what AA had to offer, where before I had definitely limited it, and that's what caused me to leave. But now I was really studying the book. I'm an avid reader. I read all the time. I usually have three or four books going and read whatever mood I'm in, but I just enjoy reading. And so I read the book a couple of times, and I was going to book studies and you know, reading the stories over and over again. And I started picking up on a lot of what I guess you would term as nuance that I had missed before. When they talked, the book talks about fear. I said, I don't have fear. You know, I'm a big, strong guy. I don't have any. I'm not afraid of anything. But on closer examination, I'm afraid of everything. I'm afraid that the guy behind me is going to run into me. The lady, I'm just worried that what are people going to think when I talk? What are people going to think of me if I make a mistake? Drinking definitely exacerbated that. If I was drinking or had been drinking recently and I was at work and was faced with a problem, I would berate myself. At your age, you should know how to do this. You should know how to do it second nature. What's wrong with you? Everybody else is smarter than you. You can't do it as good as everybody else. And just really, really let myself have it. And it all seemed to make sense. But in retrospect, it really didn't make sense. I was confident. I did know how to do it. But the alcohol made me look down on myself. The alcohol just is poison, literally. Physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. It just beats you up. It says it one page in the book. Alcohol is a great persuader. It pounded us into the ground until we learned reasonableness. And that's what finally happened to me a little over a year ago. My last relapse was in the end of September in 2021. And my previous relapse, which was in May, I had reached out to my primary care physician for some advice. And he said, "Where did you detox when you relapsed?" I said, "In my room." He said, "You shouldn't do that. It's dangerous at your age and the amount that you're drinking. It could kill you. You could have a seizure." And so on my last relapse, I called the doctor. He said, "Go to the emergency room." I went to the emergency room. They kept me in the hospital for a week. And then I was in vocational rehabilitation for 2 weeks. And I got hammered into the ground. I had balance issues. I had physical pain. I was very limited physically, with no one particular, the only cause of it all was alcohol. There was no injury. There was no physical injury, but there were all these physical pains, and everything just seemed completely bleak, no hope. Now I'm not even going to be able to work. And it just seemed like, it seemed hopeless. And I was running a room, and I was informed while I was in the hospital that I wasn't welcome back. And shortly after that, I was informed at the institution I was at that I had to leave in a few days. So I literally was a couple of days from being homeless. And I have no retirement. I have no portfolio. I live paycheck to paycheck. So it was a dire situation. There was a wonderful woman at the institution. Her name is Genesis. I'll always remember that. And she was helping me, working with me, trying to find a place for me to live. And she finally contacted a guy in AA, had his SLE, and they had an opening that had just occurred. They had one bed. And so I got it. And to me, that was a miracle. I was laying in that bed, miserable, thinking about I'm going to have to go live in my truck. And now I had a place to go. And I'm still there. And it's a small group. There are eight of us. And but it's a good group. We have meetings in the house three times a week, and we are pretty close, and we do talk about the program a lot. It's a good environment. And I did want to touch on a couple of things after speaking with Owen regarding family, because I know Al-Anon is about people who live with alcoholics, or not live with them, but have to deal with them. And I've heard people speak at meetings, a couple of men in particular, who described how they were absent for their children's upbringing. I forgot, there's a whole group over here too. And they tell the story of missing their children's childhood. Not necessarily that they were out of the house, but as you all know, when someone's drinking, even if they're not being belligerent or being drunk, they withdraw. And I know that kids are perceptive, and you can't fool them. And I would listen. I listened to these two guys talk on separate occasions, and said that their children had rejected them as they got older, and didn't want anything to do with them. But then when they, the older men who were speaking to the meeting, got into AA and got sober, and got some sobriety under their belt, that their kids welcomed them back into the family, back into the fold. And they were able to be a part of their grandchildren. They were able to be granddads. And to hear their voices, they describe it, the joy that they experienced with their grandkids that they never did with their own kids. That, plus the fact that the kids forgave and invited them back in and rewarded the sobriety and the effort with love and caring, it's just powerful to me. One of my friends at the house is going through a divorce. He recently got kicked out of his house or asked to leave. And he has two children, both one's in college, one just graduated college, but it's a huge upset. There's all kinds of conflict going on. And I hear it from him and just try to encourage him to just keep talking to everybody. I said, they're not really young kids, so you can have a conversation with them about the issues that you're all facing. And it seems to be, it's I don't foresee a big happy ending, but they're all getting along now where before they were kind of at each other. So I see the hope that comes through this program. Not that it removes all the pain, it doesn't, but it helps you learn how to deal with the pain and to just not put yourself first, to take yourself out of the picture and just do what you can to help. So I didn't even, am I close to time? I have no idea at all. Anyway, I'll just go for a little bit longer. So I'm grateful to be back in the program again. I do read the book regularly. I'm grateful for Dr. Bob and Bill and the program. And I know the whole history, and they could have easily given up many times along the way, but they persevered. And because they did, this wonderful fellowship exists today. And I've met great people in the program, and I love it because it's, you can see somebody and then not see him again for a couple of months, and you see him, and it's like seeing your sister or your brother again. It's family, and it's real, and it's true. And I've described before, I've had relationships, friendships at work, really, really good, tight, close friendships, work with these guys, but we don't socialize outside of work. But that relationship still is very important, and it's very real. And well, this isn't the same, it's a lot deeper, but still, even if I don't see you every day, when I do see you and you smile at me and give me a hug or shake my hand, I can feel the love and feel the goodness, and it's powerful. It definitely is a big part of keeping me sober. That anytime, if you look at that meeting list, it's two pages. There's no excuse not to get with some people who are like you and share your issue, and be genuinely loved and accepted by them unconditionally. And that's the power of the program to me. And so I think that's about all I have for tonight. And again, I'd like to thank you all for having me here. Thank you.